Bear Nation, how we doing? This is your host, Rob Napoli, and you are tuning in to another episode of the Bear Necessities Podcast, a podcast where we sit down with entrepreneurs, ecosystem partners, and innovation folks to talk about what it takes to launch, create, and scale businesses across the world. Hey, y'all, how we doing? We're back again for another episode of Bear Necessities Podcast. I am your host, Rob Napoli. And today's episode is going to be a fun one, is we're talking about the fintech space. And I brought on a friend of mine who I met through a good dude, Danny, had us out for drinks at that really swanky spot in Midtown. That's where I met Alex Simpson. And we just immediately kind of connected on his entrepreneurial journey and talking really about the space that he's playing. Because one that I find, you know, fascinating, I'm not big in this space, but it was just a lot of fun. So Alex, welcome to the show, my friend. I appreciate you jumping on with me and chatting here today.
Thank you, man. Love you to be on here.
Awesome. So just to give some context to the audience, Alex is a fintech founder, investor, and advisor, and has started and grown fintech platforms that aim to help people and businesses transact more easily, stress less, and manage their money more effectively, which I think is really cool because you're kind of doing all the things. So let's start here. How did you get into entrepreneurship? When did this idea of like running your own, you know, building platforms and building companies and investing in them really kind of start for you? Was that something that you knew at a young age? Was something that just kind of organically happened? How did you fall into this crazy world of entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I think it's definitely tied to like my upbringing, especially coming from a single mother where entrepreneurship was ingrained into my household and my daily living in terms of seeing how like just the work balance was very one-sided. But I was very blessed in terms of like how hard she worked for me to get me through my schooling and just the general upbringing. I think just being very cognizant about how hard she worked and like how much she sacrificed, and then being around a lot of successful business people, especially amongst my friends in terms of their parents, it rapidly grew my sense of entrepreneurship and wanting to learn and dive in deeper, quicker at a young age. So that was definitely where a lot of the desire came from.
That's awesome. And so as you kind of were kind of growing up and you know, you got that hustle early and kind of seeing that desire, what was it like? I mean, take me back to when you kind of launched your first company. What was that experience like? Was it scary? Was it exciting? A little bit of both?
You go in with no like standardized set book. I mean, now I'm aware of a lot more things online, but you kind of create your own sort of to-do list. You break it down into different functions from marketing to sales to legal, and just learning from different people. But of course, going into the business initially, a lot of the projections and direction is based on assumptions. So you just assume things will go in a certain direction or customer uptake will happen at a certain rate. And a lot of these things, you just dive into the deep end and you get your head hit. And that's the best way to learn. That's the way that was most effective to me. And I must say, like going back, like looking at the lessons I've learned, a lot of the stuff was kind of told to me by older and more experienced people in different ways. Whereas I didn't really listen to them at that stage because I thought, you know, they haven't done this exact same thing at this particular age during these particular times. So it may be different. But I think the general sentiment that I was very humbled by and that I can appreciate is that you can learn from everyone. So it's really important just to listen and to take that point in and then to make a decision from there. But that was something I really do look back on.
Yeah. Love that. You know, I think it's really important that, you know, to be curious. Curiosity is something that you have to have, you know, I think in everyone's life, but really even more so as an entrepreneur, because you have to learn how to build quickly, but also learn from others and take what you're seeing happening in the market, what others are doing, what you're doing well, and ingrain all that and cycle that into launching a product and building a company and building a team. So I think curiosity is such an important thing. And I know that you're an advisor and investor into a lot of businesses, and so you work with a lot of other great companies and founders. You know, what's kind of a key lesson that you're talking with them about when it comes to building and scaling? What are some of the things that you know, share with them, kind of taking this idea of what you just said, how you learned to be an entrepreneur and learning from great people, and now that you're giving advice, what is that like?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's easier to transfer now, and I find it's a lot of the companies that I've supported, especially based on age, like age and level of respect, they tend to listen to you. It's a lot easier than how I, like my perception of listening to someone older was when I was a bit younger. And yeah, I think like the general sentiment around finding product market fit, listening to customers, and then getting a firm understanding of what, like how much a minimum viable product would cost to get revenue is critical. And like, you don't need funding in place for those three things. And yeah, I think the general sentiment, and it's not just to do with sort of business and investing, but like just not believing in the narrative all the time is really important. So like a lot of people are fixated by a certain narrative, and I am. I mean, like we're all to fault. I'm especially to fault there. But I think getting that fixated and just staying like very clear and not being distracted is important. And like, and just getting real answers from the market on whatever you're doing.
I love that you share that, right? Don't believe in the narratives. And it's really hard for a lot of us to do, right? You're hearing all these things coming at you. How do you kind of tune out the noise a little bit to kind of chart your own path a little bit?
I think if you do like some retrospective thinking in terms of like when you did listen to a narrative and when you were honest about that data point, and then going backwards and seeing what was the ROI of that time spent or that engagement or the potential loss, you can become quite realistic with yourself. So after a few different iterations and troubleshooting of when you went to that VC networking event, or when you went to go meet up with these people who you didn't intrinsically think there would be value, and then you went retrospectively and you thought like, what was the ROI? And if it was just time wasted or there wasn't a genuine relationship built, then you know going forward how to like react or be proactive with such engagements. And that's just a personal thing of like how you can gauge it, but like just being realistic around doing things in the past and like looking backwards, I mean, and then doing them again is very important.
Yeah. So, you know, you do a lot of the work in the fintech space, and, you know, I had a really good conversation over drinks about kind of, you know, the things that you've done, and you know, you've built platforms that help people transact and stress less and manage their money more effectively, and a lot around financial literacy. What attracted you to the fintech space when you saw this growing, when you were kind of building businesses and platforms? What really attracted you to this industry, this space, these type of technologies for you that really kind of drew you in?
So yeah, so to be transparent, the motivation and inclination came from my original co-founder. When we looked at a point of sale solution very similar to Square, which is now known as Block, and after diving deep into that whole industry of transactional revenue and then building white label solutions and going B2B as opposed to B2C, that kind of really entrenched me in the space, especially after speaking with a lot of banks, understanding how big banks are and how many fundamental business lines they have at different businesses that are known as fintechs or innovating. That was really interesting. So yeah, that's kind of what got my interest in the space, and particularly not really coming from like a household filled with like wealth, and where in times it was elements of like that scarcity mindset that really motivated me to, you know, go into a sector where you're managing and helping finances. And that was where the motivation came from.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I know something for you, kind of one of your missions is really around promoting love and support through economic sustainability, you know, financial efficiencies, and you really like to address disparities in social wealth. It sounds like that comes from a place of hitting home from you. And as you just said, what do you think are some of the big trends to kind of pay attention to as we head in, you know, 2023 coming out of, you know, all the pandemic stuff, and we're looking at the world is changing fast. What are some of the things that we could be paying attention to or should be paying attention to as it relates to financial literacy and being more in tune with how we can create wealth individually or as a business?
So I do think, I mean, I'll just throw out some things that come from my gut, but I think that a user's wallet is very limited in terms of the amount of apps they can download, in terms of how much they can spend on like unessentials. And any new sort of innovation requires a lot of education, especially if you're dealing with a a consumer directly. So I think it's just very good from a B2C perspective to realize like how much education goes into a new innovative like way of thinking. So like whenever you're going to go into a space, I think instead of just following the trends and like perceived narratives of what's, you know, looking really cool or what's making the most headlines, be very realistic about like Maslow's hierarchy of needs and how much wallet space the user has in terms of like whatever you're building. And then also I think in terms of from like the fintech space, especially dealing with banks, I mean, they've got so many different subsectors of where innovation could be built. So I think really like speaking a lot with CIOs, chief innovation officers or chief technology officers at banks, regardless of size, understanding like where the different pain points are or different solutions that are very archaic, and then innovating from that. I think those are two like just really important strategies. And also just from my learnings, I think like in any startup, whenever you trying to sell to like a large corporate with over or any company that's over 100 employees in size, it's very important to put your mind in the individual's role and the liability that they or responsibility that they have, especially when dealing with the role such as a chief operations officer or chief financial officer. Even if you've got a really good relationship with them, and even if your solution is really well built and funded, just be cognizant of the perception that they have in their mind in terms of the perceived risk, like whether the company will be around for long, whether they would rather pay more and use a more credible and longstanding firm just to support their longevity in their role. So just, I think just putting yourself in a decision-making maker's shoes, whether it's B2B or B2C, all the time before you dive into a business and get it funded or, you know, start building, I think that's really key in terms of trend analysis, because you want to hear from like their mouth or the customer, because they really give you the best terms, like in terms of where things are going. I think that's really important.
Yeah, 100%. And I like that you shared that, you know, kind of the focus there, because I think it's really easy. You understand, like, not only B2C, but on B2B standpoint is we only have so much space in our wallet of what we can consume, right? Like you said, apps, money, et cetera. And so many companies today want to launch a business because they see this perceived problem and not understanding that mindset, because if it's not a necessity and it's an accessory, like there's limited space, right? And so really, as you said, getting into that mindset understands if you're building something that's a necessary or an accessory. And you can make money on an accessory product, but selling that is different. The way you take it to market, the way you sell it, the way it gets purchased, because we have limited space. We can hit 10,000 messages a day, right? We have only limited space to be educated on something new, adopt it, learn it, build it. And I think that's such a key thing that so many entrepreneurs, when they're thinking about businesses, they see a perceived problem. They don't do enough to really understand the mindset of those that would buy from it and what the problem they're solving. And they realize too late that it's not a necessary and they have to pivot or whatever. And I think that's a really important point. And so, you know, as you as an advisor to companies and companies come to you with that problem, how do you, you know, you brought up like how to do that. How can we learn that? What are the ways, like what are the things that we should be doing to get inside the mind of our customer ahead of time? Like what are some great tips and tricks that you have to really get inside the mind of your customer?
Well, I think going like you want to have a biased and a non-biased point of view from a personal relationship perspective. So I think going to immediate network who would potentially be users and asking them for advice, like always take it in also with a bit of a grain of salt, because they may also tell you what you want to hear to make you feel good and to please the relationship. Or you may go to people that are just genuine friends and they'll just tell you the hard truth of whether something is like shit or like it's not going to work, because you want to hear both opinions. And then I think going to them and the ones that like really want you to succeed or just genuine relationships and asking them for other like introductions to people who would be non-biased in terms of their opinion to you, that would be critical. So I think, yeah, just organically asking people that would, you know, not leave you, you know, cold in terms of a response is like critical in the beginning. And then once you develop a bit more of a curated list of responses, both biased and non-biased, I think getting a small group together on an instant messaging channel like WhatsApp or a small group and just kind of like curating the ideas and creating conversations, whether it be from an online conversation or just a call once a month, I think there you can like get a lot of creativity going. And also when you build with end customers, it's very appealing for them to put extra effort in terms of creativity, in terms of them giving you the need of what the product could serve or like features. So I think like that's like a one strategy I would dive into, whether it's B2B or B2C.
I love that you brought this up, because a lot of times we go to our close network and people want to see us succeed and they agree with us and they don't give us that unbiased opinion that we need to hear. And so leveraging your close network to hear and understand where it's coming from, and then leveraging those relationships to talking to people that are going to just give you real raw data points is important. Yep. It's really easy to get stuck in our echo chambers of biased opinion. And I love that you share that, because that is something that it's really easy to fall in that trap, right? It's really easy to fall in the trap of going to those people we know that are going to support us and want to see us succeed. And they don't tell us all the hard truths that we need to hear so that we can create the best product or the company to take to market. So I love that. That's a huge nugget of wisdom. If somebody came to you and was like, Alex, I'm thinking about starting a business. I want to be an entrepreneur. What advice would you give them? Where would you start? What's like the, in your gut or in your brain, like the first thing that comes to your mind when someone says, hey, Alex, I want to start my own business, but I'm not exactly sure where to start. What do you got for me?
So I think like just the mindset of like being an entrepreneur, being an owner, I think you need to be always cognizant that like you will always have a boss, whether it's the customer or the investor. So like, I think going in with a servant mindset is quite key. And like, if someone asks you what you do, you say like you work for a company, and then you can say like that you co-founded, like just going in with that like mindset is it kind of puts less pressure on you, and it's a clearer energy. And then from there, I think when you go in with that servant type mindset, it gives you more confidence to kind of like speak to people, and to like get clearer feedback, because I think it'll be a lot more appealing for you to like succeed in an entrepreneurial role after you've like gotten success through the business you started, by starting off from a very like humble like point of view, and that mindset, it is easier to adopt into the business. Also you're getting fixed out of like, what's my perception on others in terms of me, my role, I don't want to disappoint, etc. I think just going in with an exploratory servant type mindset gives you less room for disappointing yourself and less room of you building up like this narrative of yourself. I think that's just critical. And then, yeah, I think just really just as mentioned before, like speaking to customers and really understanding like how you could have a moat. And if there's competitors in the space, like clearly understand like either how you could work with them or like how you can genuinely work alongside them. And just to check that like there is a truly addressable market for what you're trying to solve. And also, if your product or service is realistically like a feature that another big company could start, or that you could potentially service to white label to them, I think those are critical points just to like go into and answer like realistically.
So I love that you brought this up, because this is something that I get all the time when I talk to people and I see these decks and I see people pitch at events. When they get to that competitor slide, it's like, there's really no competitor in the market. And it's like, the fuck there isn't. There's always a competitor in the market in some way, shape, or form. And I love this idea of understanding who your competitors are. There's a great book called Steal Like an Artist by Austin Kleon. And the idea is, you know, take inspiration from others. You look at your competitors, you see what they're doing good, you see what they're doing bad. You take that, you can adopt that into your strategy. Learning from others in the market, having conversations. You know, I use the term co-opetition, which was coined by a friend of mine, Matt Camp. Which like working with your competition. Like when I was a recruiter back in the day in Des Moines, we used to get together quarterly with all the companies that are in the tech recruitment space. And we just talk about challenges. You know, we would use it as a chance to kind of upskill, learn how we're working with companies. And you know, we weren't necessarily like passing referrals and stuff, but it was more like, what are we doing as a market as a whole? How can we better service our clients? What are things that we challenge with? And it was one of those things I really loved, getting coffee with them once a quarter, was we just all learn from each other. And this leads me to one of the things you always say, and you sign off with it and everything, and it's on your LinkedIn headline, rising tides, right? And I love that you talk about this, rising tides raise all ships. And so my question to you comes into, what do you think your purpose is? You know, as you've been building companies and investing in companies and advising companies, where do you see your purpose is in the market and what you're doing?
So like, I mean, it may sound like very lovey-dovey, but like my purpose is to transfer love indirectly and directly through as many different channels as possible. So what a very big passion of mine is connecting. So if you can transfer like energy through the form of like a financial product to a node or someone that can affect multiple people, and then ends up creating jobs or that creates more education, that's sustaining and fulfilling my purpose, and that gives me fuel. I am exceptionally commercially driven, and realistically, and I do think that that non-for-profit should be derived from profit-generating businesses. I'm very fueled by that. That's the general purpose that keeps me going. But I like growth. Like anything that's accretive to growth is very important to me. It's very difficult for me to sustain like monotonous conversations or be around people that aren't like accretive to my growth in a non-selfish, like in a selfish manner, to be honest, because like time is limited and I'm just obsessed with seeing like progress. But I think that if you can like affect people that could affect other people, like nodes and derivatives, that's very appealing to me. And as long as it's like transmitted with a good energy, that's important. And I'd love to like, in everything I'm building, I'd love to like constantly find ways to truly quantify that measure as much as possible and scale.
I have to say, I love that, right? I love that answer, and the fact that you understand that your purpose to transfer good energy and help others become more, you know, financially independent, financially literate, all these things can happen by not only people, but also communities and products. And if you can funnel that energy in and help create things that help create more and more people, that long tail of it, that's amazing. And I think it's so powerful and inspiring that, you know, you're looking at things on, you know, is this product or service going to help impact others for good, right? And that's something that's really cool, and I really appreciate you sharing that. And you know, you mentioned something there that I think is really important, right? You mentioned being a little selfish, and I think that people have to be selfish to be selfless, meaning you have to surround yourself with those who fill up your cups, that your cup can runneth over and you can help others fill their cup, right? You know, when you are fulfilled, you're more likely to help others be fulfilled, and you can take that energy, and it's that transfer energy. Again, the rising tides raise all ships, right? Everyone doing it together, that energy that connects and binds us. So I love that you bring that up, because I think saying that can have a negative connotation, like being selfish to be selfless, but you have to be selfish at times with who you surround yourself or where you spend your time, so that you can put your energy into your purpose. You can put your energy back into the things that make an impact. And I love that you shared that, because it's something that sometimes people are afraid to share, that they're a little bit selfish to make the impact they want to have, or to be selfless with their time. And you mentioned communities a lot, and I know that you've built a couple of different communities. Why are communities and building communities so important in today's ecosystem?
I mean, I just think like collectively, like when you're around people that are on the same sort of drive and motivation, it's that collective like push is quite helpful, especially if you're part of a community and you haven't met other people in that community based on the fact that they're involved in that sort of group. It takes away a lot of time in terms of like due diligence and verification of the purpose or the person, because they're already part of this community. So therefore there must be a layer of vetting, so they feel more comfortable to like work with each other or like connect with each other, and it saves time. And potentially if that community is bounded by a common theme of like rising tides or like helping each other, then you're effectively going to affect other people. So those two people interact and they know, wow, we connected because of this thesis of the group. They try to pay it forward. It's easier to track and it's easier to do it, but in a more organic way. That's my feeling.
I love that. I think that communities are amazing. I'm in quite a few. And at one point I was in a community overload. I was in too many communities that I wasn't getting any value. And I really struck down to picking one or two communities that were just that, where I felt that they were more my tribe, where they were in a similar space with me, where I could chat more. I can share something where everyone was going to rally to help answer or get engaged, where I didn't feel ashamed to ask a question or post something because I knew that everyone in that group or that community was there to help tie it all together and lift each other up. And I think that's really important. And I think, you know, we're all out there trying to find those. And when you find a good one, it's important. And I think that's what, you know, and not everyone needs to be in every community, right? You need to find the ones that are, because you're going to grow, right? Like where I am today is not where I'm going to be next year, right? Or the year after. So as I grow, that might mean a different community. That might be the whole community that I'm in all raise up. Like it's ever changing. And so you need to continue to surround yourself with those that are going to help you in that growth. And that's where community is big play. I mean, it's hard to make friends as you get older. It's hard to meet people. It's hard to know where to go with that stuff. And if you have a community, you know, you have a ready-made place with people who are willing to help out. I think that's really, that's powerful. And it goes back to your mission of Rising Tides, right? And it creates this energy. So I love that. Man, I know we could talk for hours. So I want to kind of give you a chance to throw out, you know, what are you working on? Where can people find you? Any shout outs you have that the listeners should be paying attention to?
Sure. Well, no, I appreciate this, Rob. So like the main focus I'm doing now is to really open up liquidity for like illiquid assets, particularly private stocks, and also to support ideas and young entrepreneurs and pre-seed companies from like an investment and advisory side and giving them a platform to kind of get their ideas off the ground. Those are the two focuses. So I'll share with you my email and website for anyone to contact me or to engage with. And yeah, it was just a pleasure connecting. But I hope there's some message that could be transferred here.
So absolutely. I think there's a couple of different things that really could be transferable from lessons and advice. And I'll make sure to, in the show notes of this episode, wherever you're listening on, we'll have Alex's LinkedIn, his email, and his website. If you want to connect with him, do so. Alex, one of those guys that if you let him know that you heard him here and you connect, he will take time to connect with you and see how he can help. If he can't help you, he probably knows somebody that can. So he's a great person to know. So make sure you check him out. Alex, we appreciate you being a part of Baron Nation today, taking the time. I look forward to, you know, many more conversations with you. And we'll definitely have to get drinks again soon. So I appreciate you. Baron Nation, thanks for tuning in.
Thank you, man.
You know, go check out my man, Alex. Until next time, Baron Nation, stay well, rise up. Baron Nation, thanks for listening to the Bare Necessities of Entrepreneurship. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave us a review.